Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost checking in here on a Wednesday night for your Thursday morning delivery. We got a lot to talk about. Mostly news, I would say, as we already unpacked UFC 299 on Monday show. But some stuff is still trickling in. It was a big show. And rightfully so. I mean, like, guys, it took me hours to do this week's rankings. I love it, man. I love covering cards like that where we talk about it for weeks on end leading up to the event. Fight week's great, and then coming out of fight week, it's great too. So yeah, news, some more UFC 299 chatter. Corey Anderson is going to be a guest of ours. Overtime's got a big fight coming up on the 22nd of March out in Northern Ireland. He's going to be fighting Carl Moore. And it's for the vacant light heavyweight title at Bellator. Remember, Bellator is kind of still doing their thing under the PFL banner, at least for a year. That's what it sounds like. We'll be right back to start the show. I don't know if you caught it, goes, but Corey Sanhagen, like, you know, it seems like everyone's got a YouTube channel. And so Corey was kind of giving a little breakdown of O'Malley's stand-up, his striking, and what makes him so good. It was interesting. It was only like 6 or 7 minutes long, so I watched it. But it's funny because, I mean, he literally buries poor Marlon Vera. Vera's had a rough week. Caught it, but his house got broken into. Obviously, his face is a mess, and, you know, people are saying that he didn't even belong in there with him. He shouldn't have been in there to begin with. Like, just, you know, the guy battled. He got his butt kicked on in front of millions. He's technically 1-1 with the champ. Let the guy just breathe, you know what I'm saying?
He is, but it's one of those George St. Pierre, Matt Serra 1-1s, you know, where nobody's really saying, okay, let's decide it in a third fight. Like, we all kind of said, whoa, this doesn't even need to really see a third fight unless we saw something absolutely magical from Marlon Vera where he turned his career around. And, you know, it was just, it was brutal. Do you disagree? I mean, he was kind of spot on, right, with everything he was saying, and a couple other people.
Yeah, but I just think that you can say, hey, look, this is how O'Malley dominated Vera. Go through it. But, like, he went out of his way to say he's terrible. He even said, I'm sorry if you're a Cheeto fan. He's just not that good. He just kept going. You know, okay, look. When you win, you get all the flowers. When you lose, you take heat, you take your medicine, whatever. But I guess I feel bad because his house got broken into. Like, and, you know, this is common, dude, in the entertainment and sporting world. This has happened to a few Manchester United players. It's happened to actors when everyone knows they're going to be out for the night. I guess they come out, you know, and you have a good idea that someone's just not going to be home for 6 to 8 hours. Sure, big target. You know, let's go.
I mean, you know.
And Cheeto took it like a champ. He kind of just said, hopefully they needed whatever it was. They needed it. They needed it that bad. God bless. He did say, I'm going to catch you one day. But other than that, like, he just kind of like, what are you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, like, I don't know, if I were a burglar, it would have to be a pretty interesting scenario for me to even consider breaking into, say, a cop's house, into a fighter's house. Like, I think I get it. Like, hey, we all know he's going to be in Miami. He's going to be fighting at this time, so there's no way he's going to be home. But, shit, couldn't you say that about somebody going to the Oscars or something? Like, granted, they probably live in better neighborhoods that are maybe a little bit more secure, but I don't know. I just avoid a fighter's house at all costs. I mean, you saw what happened with Sean Strickland about a month ago. It's like, I just want no part of that. I even when, like, if I'm driving around and I look at houses, if I see like a beware of dog or any little thing like that, West Tech security, that's enough for me to say, you know what? The next door neighbor doesn't have it. I'd rather deal with that house than any of these. Like, you got to be pretty ballsy to do something like that to a fighter. But yeah, just a terrible week for Marlon Vera. But Corey Sanhagen, you know, he made some good points. Henry Cejudo. Marlon Vera's got to really, really go back to the drawing board. He needs a lot of rest. And then it's one of those situations that we often talk about where pick a university or something and just immerse yourself in wrestling, because you can't fight one-dimensional like that.
Well, here's the thing. Not many people that I remember were that against the fight, other than to say, hey, it should be Mirab, which is a good point, or hey, maybe it should be Sanhagen. I don't even think Nurmagomedov's at that point yet. And there's another article that we'll talk about where somebody says that. He's not a contender yet. I might have to agree. He's undefeated. He's a stud. But you got to get through at least a killer or two before we go, oh, okay, this guy's no joke. So, but going into the fight, you know why no one said, what's he doing here? Because the champ called him out. The champ called him out because Vera stopped him 4 years ago, but he stopped him. Like, so I think that's why it's like, now you're just kind of like maybe adding on something that you really don't need to add on, and, you know, pretending like you knew that this was going to be a one-sided 50-45, 50-44 affair. I think a lot of us thought, you know, this could be a little bit closer. Nobody expected O'Malley to get that much better in between fights.
No, nobody did. But they just, for one, how long have we been talking about slow starts? And this wasn't his slowest start.
It wasn't that slow.
But he still took round one off. And I mean, in a 5-round fight, in a 3-round fight, whatever. It you just don't give anything away. You don't give anything away in the sport.
Right.
And then just the inability to adjust to the game plan. He just has to go back and figure all this out if he wants to keep doing this at a high level, because that wasn't just a loss. That was a beating. He suffered very bad damage to his skull, to his legs, his hands. Like, you can't go. I don't care how much you get paid. That's not worth that.
That knee, Sanhagen speculates that it broke bones in his face. I think he even said the orbital bone. He's probably getting surgery this week. I don't know for a fact if he is or isn't. I mean, I've been hearing, like, I've been watching a lot of reposts, I guess. Is that what X calls it now? They don't call it retweets. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, turn the volume up, and you can hear the knee just crack. Mm-hmm. It cracks him. On the watch along, we were saying that he looked like Evan Tanner, which, if you haven't followed the sport for that long, you probably weren't getting that joke, but his face was puffy. I mean, that's a bantamweight looking like a middleweight. Tanner was a middleweight and a light heavyweight, but yeah, it's 1-1. We don't need to see, I'm on board. We don't need to see the trilogy. Vera would probably have to win 3 in a row, all finishes and good fighters. And then I think we'd go, well, let's give it another shot. You're right. It's got a little GSP Sarah to it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, because they are entertaining before the fight, right? With it, they get in each other's faces. It seems like it could be fun, but I think we just need to see more out of Marlon Vera. And I don't know what that guy, I feel bad for him, like what must be going through his head right now, because to get to the top of that division is such a struggle. And to know you were right there, and just so many of his countrymen were there, you know, news outlets from Ecuador, it just must be demoralizing for that guy. I really hope somebody gets a hold of him and they come up with some sort of plan moving forward.
Yeah. And you're probably right. I would start with adding. I mean, I guess it wasn't the jiu-jitsu and the wrestling that killed him, but it's what it would take to do something to O'Malley, because kickboxing versus O'Malley, it's not a level playing field right now, not for Cheeto. Cheeto would come out of maybe rounds four. I just remember like two or three rounds where he came out, and it looked like those first 30 seconds he was, he's possessed. Like, okay, let's go. What's up? Mm-hmm. And then he would realize, yeah, I'm outmatched here. Sandhagen was taller, had more range, more speed. Hell, he may have even had more power, dude. He was money. And you know what? I did see Cheeto and him kind of talking online. And that's where I'd say, just take the L. Just take the L, leave it alone. No need to bring up that you made a noise with that body shot at the end. O'Malley already gave you your due. O'Malley said as much at the post-fight press conference. So, like, literally, just take that. You're 1-1. And if something happens in the future, okay, cool. But I guess the reason I started with this, I was just thinking, if a journalist or fan tweeted that, they would get, well, I don't know. I guess either Vera or Vera's people would be like, you've never been in the octagon. You don't know what it's like, you know? But now a fighter says it, and they've been in the octagon. They know what it's like, but it'll be construed as rude or piling on or something like that. Very, very finicky sport we're in.
Totally. I mean, look, dude, you have to understand, too, with Marlon Vera, like, Marlon's not, like, the most quiet dude. You know, he talks a lot of smack, too. He's a get-in-your-face type guy, too, so... The good thing about that is, you know, help sell your career. But when things go bad, you have to expect that people are going to come after you. It's a gamble.
Some other news that came out. Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz are going to box June 1st in Los Angeles. It's, by the way, it's the same night as UFC 302, which is June 1st. And I don't know, like, that didn't seem wise, to tell you the truth. I've seen two pay-per-views in two different sports do well in the past, but it just seems like you can maybe get the UFC machine behind you, because these guys usually kind of get the blessing from the UFC to be able to do something like this, especially Masvidal. Even though he's retired, his contract's retained by the UFC. I don't think that's the case with Nate Diaz, but it seems like Dana White speaks highly of them. So I would have thought that maybe they wouldn't go against the UFC for one, the competition, and two, they don't have their support. They get down at the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California. It's 10 rounds at 175 pounds, and the pay-per-view will go for $49.99. What do you think of this, goes? Does this fall under Tyson and Jake Paul? Man, I don't care. Or are you intrigued?
I'm intrigued to a certain extent. You know, it's funny. I did a Triple G show today, and something came out of my mouth that I wasn't expecting. And it's. I thought about it. Is MMA to a certain extent helping carry boxing? And what I mean by that is, you only get major pay-per-view boxing a few times a year, like high level, two fighters that you're like, what's going to happen here? I can't wait for this. That doesn't happen too often. It's not like the UFC where it's every week. There seems like there's something going on. You get decent matchups, but not like the pay-per-view-esque ones. And I feel like these guys from MMA that are going over to boxing and they're putting a spotlight on boxing that kind of keeps them afloat until they get to that next major event. It's almost like a minor league of sorts. And I'm intrigued in the sense that these aren't two guys that I think they're a little past their prime, but they're not suckers either. Like, they're still high level athletes. Yeah. And Nate Diaz kind of won me over a little bit with his performance against Jake Paul. I thought it was going to be atrocious, and I thought it was pretty good, and it left a little room for improvement where I was like, shit, I think he could even be a little better than that. Jorge Masvidal, I already know, is going to come out, and he's going to look pretty decent boxing-wise. So the where it doesn't intrigue me too much is it upsets me to a certain extent because I just think, man, I just wish that was someone else. Because at the end of the day, what does this prove? They're both boxing. We're trying to find out, like, who's the more badass? Because we already figured that out in MMA. That was the more true fight. The fight experience there is a very close simulation to what would happen if they ran into each other at Costco or whatever, right? We know the answer to this. If Nate Diaz wins, well, what does that prove? Like, I mean, if you're Masvidal, don't you just go, hey, congratulations on being the better boxer. I'm the better fighter. I don't know. That part of me kind of doesn't like that much too much, but I think it's going to be fun, and I think they are going to split some rounds between them. And if you're giving it to me for $50 versus what I got to pay for a UFC card, maybe you might win me over. You know,
really? Like, as in, you won't watch the UFC and you'll watch these guys, or you'll watch both?
I have to, but I'm just saying, if I weren't MMA Junkie Goes and I was just a regular guy, you might get me to tune in for that and not the other card, buy it, you know? Unless you're a baller and you just buy them both. But I think a lot of people have to make a decision.
The only thing I know about 302 is Joslyn Edwards and Eileen Perez, Mickey Gall and Basil Hayfez, Grant Dawson and Joe Selecki. That's literally it. Mm-hmm. So what I will give you is this. Let's say someone wants to just go on a sporting event weekend. If you look at 302 and they haven't done much with it, and then you know Diaz and Masvidal, they've done something with that. Well, you know they're going to throw something pretty good on the undercard. That's how, at least in this version of boxing, which is the MMA guys, YouTube influencers, it seems like they give you a few fights that are fun. It just sounds like more fun to me to go to Inglewood than what 302 has been built, how 302 has been built right now. Now, I might be wrong, and maybe 302 gets DDP and fucking Izzy or something. I'm like, shit. But, you know, that Diaz and Masvidal have built something. So, you know, I just don't think they have to go against a pay-per-view. They can go against a fight night, but do they really have to go against a pay-per-view? I don't know. And then the other thing I'll say is, it's fun. I'll watch it, but I know I'm not watching high-level boxing. I don't really want to watch because I don't think someone has to eat crow or take their medicine, because I felt like that was done already with MMA. Yeah. This just seems like a cash grab, and I'm not hating on the guys, but I don't know. I posted on Instagram. I'm like, maybe I'd get more excited if they just bare-knuckle boxed. Like, that just seems like that gives you more promise of carnage, you know, like blood and cuts and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I agree with all that. It's just, if I'm just Joe Schmo and I have my budget or whatever, you might be able to talk me into it, even if I do think the UFC card's a little better, just to save on roughly almost, $20, $25.
$30, $80, and this one's $50. And you're right. Like UFC 297, the one in Toronto, other than DDP and Strickland, and there might have been one other fight in there, it just wasn't that attractive. I would have skipped that one for Masvidal versus Diaz in boxing.
You know how I look at it, George? Is, let's say we're both here, right? And we go, all right, which one are we going to order? We're either going to pay $90 for the UFC, or we're going to pay $50 for this pay-per-view, right? Or was it $80? I think it's $80, right? 50. Yeah. Why not? I would tell you something like this. Let's just order the boxing and order a round table to go with it. You know what I mean? Like something like that. They might catch you, and you're right. Like they tend to put fun fights on these cards. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not so much the main event anymore. Now boxing's kind of learned. They've made the undercards a little better. So who knows what else we could possibly get on this, but I'd be down for that.
It's just kind of more of an event, you know? It's now, we've been kind of chastising the UFC, saying, you know, last year, like, you guys are throwing main events way together way too late. This is still June 1. It's now March 13th, but it just seemed like the UFC was kind of getting ahead of things in the first quarter of 2024. So I would have thought they would address this one up a little bit more. I guess they're still working on the one in Rio de Janeiro. But yeah, like, I still wouldn't go against them, but I still feel like right now they're an attractive option for that day, June 1st.
I mean, look, dude, 298, 299, and 300, they're going to cost the UFC a little bit. These cards that come after 301, 302, maybe even as far as 303, they're going to have to suffer a little bit because of what they've done in these other cards. So it could just be that the UFC maybe even throws in their chips and they just give you a good main event and that's about it. You know, I don't know that they have the horses to fill all these cards at a high level.
Yeah, could be. Back in the day, Frankie Edgar was a big Jersey guy and maybe a Chris Weidman. But once New York opened up, you know, they could kind of spread these guys around a little. But I guess we're still a few months away. However, what do you think of this? You see the way Colby Covington's coming after Ian Garry? Holy cow, he's pretty explicit in the trash talk. Like, he's coming straight for the wife.
Dude, he's got no chill. But again, Ian Garry is a guy that kind of has no chill too. And when you play that game, you just cannot be shocked at what's going to be thrown back at you, especially when you know Colby Covington's out there in your division. Like, he is really going to light you up. So it's hard to feel sorry for Ian Garry too.
Yeah. I don't think Ian Gary's gone this hard, but yeah, I guess when it comes to that, there's no policing it. There's a line, you cross it, and then after that, it's all systems go, whatever flies. And I think Ian Garry may have crossed that a little bit. But yeah, Covington's really, really taking it to the next level. I don't get as upset because I think one can see through it, but not everyone's like me, and I have a feeling a lot of people are going to, like, be coming after Covington, like, he went too far, you know, that type of thing.
But what's the punishment for that, right? Like, the punishment is you're going to get locked up in a cage with him. You get to actually give the punishment. Some people do it and others don't, right? Jorge Masvidal didn't give him the punishment. He gave it to him later, but he didn't give it to him in the cage. Sometimes that's kind of the good thing about our sport, is at the end of the day, you don't sit there guessing and trying to figure out what would happen. It's actually going to happen. And if they make that fight happen, which I have to imagine they're going to try and do that at some point, that's your chance. You know, that's where you shut everyone up, and you only have so many lives in this business. You can't be talking smack and losing over and over and over and over again. That's where Conor McGregor's at. He's kind of like the shitter get off the pot mode right now, I think, with Michael Chandler.
Who did he want originally? Do you remember? I think it was Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, right? That Colby was picking a fight with.
Yeah, wasn't he calling him a child monster or something like that, or something weird like that?
No. Well, I guess he's focused on Ian Garry now, but I think a lot of us want to see Paige versus Garry.
Yeah. Michael Bisping said something about that too.
Mm-hmm. And it was Merab Dvalishvili who said he just doesn't think that Umar Nurmagomedov is in the bantamweight title picture yet. He's 17-0 overall, 5-0 in the UFC, but he doesn't call him a contender. And look, he hasn't really fought a contender. He did an interview with Nolan King from MMA Junkie, and he said that recently. I think it was today, actually.
Yesterday?
Okay. There is a guy from Dagestan. He's a good fighter, but he fight nobody. He fought somebody from debut, and now he wants to fight for the belt. It's not how it works. I think it's very disrespectful. There are other guys who have a long winning streak, and he should fight them. So, a little scolding there from a fellow colleague at bantamweight. 17-0 and 5-0 in the UFC. That's no joke. But when you're Merab Dvalishvili, I think you can launch a scud like that at somebody. He's 17-4 overall, 10-2. in the UFC and riding a 10-fight winning streak.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about that division is, like, you really, really have to come with something pretty strong to even be considered. And a guy like Merab is at the top of the hill right now. You know, everybody's got to go through him. They want to get to Sean O'Malley. And he kind of made sense. I mean, I think he made sense with what he said.
Yeah. He's got scoreboard. He's won 10 in a row. And he's looked great along the way. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say. But this is the thing. If Numar Nurmagomedov gets matched up against Henry Cejudo, we'll say, and beats him, now all of a sudden he's a title challenger, you know, like overnight. So we'll see. Oh, yeah. Maybe this is just setting up a fight for the future, or who knows. But Merab's really, really growing on me.
Oh, yeah, he's fun, man. He's such a crack-up, and his game has evolved. I like that he kind of splits his time in New York and Vegas. He's just an all-around interesting guy, and he didn't have that spotlight on him always. You know, he kind of took it upon himself. Those videos that he films are so funny, man, the one where he's in the boardroom. And remember, this is like English is not his first language, and he's trying. He's trying, and you got to appreciate that.
And I like how he kind of warmed up to the thing with the Mexican crowd backing him. He's in Mexico with a sombrero and a poncho, dude. I was like, well played. And I don't know if he can start taking those next steps, but he kind of reminds me of Khabib Nurmagomedov, where he, you know, a foreigner, but speaks just enough English that he comes off a little charming because he's got, you know, a few token sayings, a little bit of a sense of humor. But this guy might even be wittier than Nurmi, the original Nurmi.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see the UFC 300 cinematic trailer with Baba O'Reilly energy?
I haven't clicked it yet. You want to know what I clicked?
It's long, so you should check it out. You'll like it.
I've been excited about that. Somebody asked about that at a presser or something, and I got Dana White's gears turning a little bit. And so today I saw it, I was going to click it. And you know what I ended up clicking instead was the Roadhouse trailer. I was like, you know what? Look, man, I think we're both in the same boat. We're big fans of the original, and remakes are just hard to do. But it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. I saw it and I was like, this is interesting. The few times that you get to see Connor act in the trailer, it's not too bad. You know, the only thing with me with some of these guys that do this, like a Conor McGregor or like a Rampage Jackson or The Rock, those guys that when they come from different places to act, is like The Rock and Rampage, when they act, I just feel like no matter what, I can't stop looking at them like they're The Rock and they're Rampage. You know what I mean? And so with Conor, he does kind of make you forget he's Connor a little bit. And I thought that was pretty cool. The storyline seems very close, you know, to what happened before. There's just a little bit more of an MMA tie-in, but it wasn't that bad. I mean, I would give it a shot.
Yeah. I mean, it's just coming out straight to video or something like that, right? Netflix or something like that.
One of those. Yeah.
Yeah. So that whole thing about going to the movies, it's fun. Juliet doesn't mind it, and neither do I. But if it's coming straight to video and I got it, then I'd rather consume it that way.
Just depends on what it is for me.
Yeah. Let's talk to Corey Anderson. We'll talk about this fight coming up against Carl Moore, excuse me. Him and Carl Moore face each other on March 22nd, Bellator 302, and it's for the vacant light heavyweight world title left behind by Vadim Nemkov. What's going on, Junkie Nation? We're joined by Corey Anderson, who's got a big fight coming up on March 22nd. Carl Moore's his opponent. They'll be battling for the vacant Bellator light heavyweight title. What's up, Overtime? How are you?
I'm good, man. How you guys?
Good, good. Good to have you as always. You always bring the energy. You always get me pumped up for your fights because you kind of spell things out like with facts and stuff, you know. And I wanted to ask you, you've been down this road before. What have you learned from those two opportunities? One was like a number one eliminator with Błachowicz. The other one was the fight with Nemkov. What have you learned from there that you can apply to this fight where you know you're going to get your hand raised on the 22nd?
Biggest thing I've learned is train like you always train. And that's it. I know with the Nemkov fight, the last Nemkov fight, it was battering injuries going into the first Nemkov fight. And they told me we're going to run it back right away. So, like, there was no point in going to get surgery or PRP, anything, stem cell, none of that. Just get right back to the gym and start training to stay in shape. So our goal with the coaches was like, we're going to try to make it to the fight. We don't want to get hurt. Let's make it to the fight. So we didn't really train hard. I didn't box bar one time. I think I hit mitts maybe one time. The rest was flowing on the noodles. We just worked on wrestling and jiu-jitsu. Wrestling and jiu-jitsu. Like, we got to play it safe. We can't get hurt and lose this opportunity. It wasn't much else to learn from the fight. We mauled him in wrestling. We're going to go out there and do it again. That's where he had a whole two rounds of me wrestling and grappling and to learn from. And he went and he did that. He learned from it. And then they kept pushing the fight off. And he had more time to heal as I was just making my injuries worse. And like I said, just playing it safe. Like, I never wanted to – I wanted to push hard, but I was scared if I pushed too hard, I wasn't going to make the fight. And they can get a title fight to somebody else in this. I've never pulled out of a fight. So I trained a little different. Like, I trained hard, but I didn't do what I need to. Well, that's what I've learned. Like, we can't do that again, no matter what. Injury, no injury. We're going out, we're going to train 100%. If we end up getting hurt, we get hurt. We'll deal with that, then we get there. But we're not cutting it short no more. We're going to box bar every week. We're going to kick box bar. We're going to MMA spar. We're going to wrestle hard. We're going to do jiu-jitsu. We're doing pads every time with 16-ounce gloves, so my hands is right. I feel fluid. I'm confident, comfortable, and that's where we are. That's the biggest thing I learned. Like, no matter what, don't count your chickens before it hatch. Because in my mind, it was said, none of this guy can do. We already showed in the first fight. We can go out and just maul him again this time. I counted my chickens way before it hatched. And he did the opposite. And he was prepared to work and do what he had to do to go out there and beat me the next time. And that's what he did.
That badge of honor of never having pulled out of a fight, I hear it a lot from the wrestling community. I applaud it. But could you almost, you and wrestlers, almost be your own worst enemy by powering through rather than healing and resting up or getting a surgery for a nagging injury and then being 100 when the time comes to fight for gold?
100%. We are definitely our worst enemies when it comes to that. And that's the wrestling mentality. It's hard to get past it because, especially if you're like me, wrestling since third grade all the way through your senior year in college, that's just what it is. Like, I coach college wrestling now, and I hear coaches say all the time, like, yo, like, are you injured or you hurt? Are you injured or you hurt? Like, can you keep going? All right, let's go. Let's push through it. It's only going to last for so long. You're only going to be hurt for a little bit. The match is 7 minutes, then you'll be fine after. And it's like, very rarely do you hear a kid. I actually had one of my kids actually to go for like third place as All-American. He's like, nah, my shoulder's screwed. I'm done. I injured 4-6. I'm done with it. I'm cool. My senior year, All-American, I'm fine. I just looked at him, you know what? I respect. I'm not going to push you. I'm not going to make you do anything. This is your body, your career. If you're happy with it, congratulations. So congrats on All-American. Let's get you taken care of. As for me, I would have been like, nope, I'm going. I'm going to risk it all. I'm going to risk it all. I got to go. I can't go. I got to go. I got to go. But like I said, it can't hurt me.
Corey, one thing that will always stand out to me was you talking to us one time and telling us, essentially, you were in a camp for over a year. You know, you didn't have that break. What was it like pulling out of that and kind of getting back to normal? Did it almost sour you a little bit on MMA? Like, what was that feeling like?
It was exhausting. That's what it's really like, you know. It's still, even till now, it's like this buyout and this long layoff. Haven't been in camp at all. I've been training and stuff, but like, it's exhausting because like I got a wife and kids. My wife been wanting to do this girls trip with her friends. It was like, when can we schedule? Like, I don't know. We don't know. So when you're in there for a year, you keep saying you're gonna fight, you're gonna fight, we're gonna get you a fight. You don't know. You're just training, and you're going hard the whole time because it could be next week, it could be next month, it could be 2 months. You just don't know when they're gonna call you. It gets very nerve-wracking, especially when you're putting your body through the ringer and you're only getting paid when you fight. unless you got a good sponsor that's paying you monthly, which I didn't have at that time. I do now, but it's like you just grinding, grinding, grinding for that moment that hopefully it comes. It's waiting for the call, and they call it, and they pushing it back a little further, and they're going over and over and over. Then you get in there. It's like a sigh of relief, but at the same time, it's like, I got another fight to get ready for, because at that time, I was in the tournament, and I was like, I got to get ready for it again. And so I didn't lose focus, but at the same time, I was just tired of it. It's like, I just want to go on a break. I want to take a vacation, but you can't take your foot off that gas because you never know when they're going to call you again.
You know, Carl Moore, he's a tough fighter. He's a southpaw. A lot of fighters find that annoying. But you've had so many fights, Corey, that I imagine you've just about trained for everything, seen everything. But are there still things that kind of catch you off guard by your opponents when you're doing tape, when you're preparing for them?
No, not really. Like I said, I've had enough fights where I've seen it, I've done it. Like I said, I've been in the game for, 10 years in the big time. Since UFC belts are for 10 years, I fought 2 or 3 southpaws thus far. One of my main training partners, I've always had Carl Roberson, who's 85 UFC southpaw. We train daily. But for some reason, going this fight, like I was confident we'd be fine. But for some reason, I felt like having only Carl and I got this new kid, Nick Galante, that trains at one of our gyms, was enough for softball. Like, I want to make sure, like I said, I want to make sure every dot is crossed. We train as hard as we can. So I went to Vegas. I was reaching out southpaws, looking for softball boxers, softball from MMA. So I went to a different gym instead of Shrimp Couture to spar. Found softballs there. Came back. I was flying out of a guy here, Roland Dunlap. Nah, he fought PFL Challenge Series, Karate Combat. Have him come out with softball. Find southpaws in Philly, Kyle Dawkins, a former UFC guy. This other southpaw that was out there, long, tall, heavyweight. Like, I'm finding as many southpaws as I can, so I'm doing every session, jiu-jitsu, striking, drilling, wrestling, everything I'm doing from a southpaw position, so when we get in there, we don't run into anything like, oh, we ain't seen that before, because Carl didn't do that. So we brought so many different guys in and out, going to their gyms, coming back, so I'm prepared. No matter what Carl Moore throws, I'm 100% sure I got the answer for it. I'm ready. I'm not going to be caught off guard. I got the foot game down. I can box bar, straight box bar southpaw. I can kick box with the southpaws. And MMA, I got my takedowns and everything solid now. So I'm just ready to go out there and show it.
Corey, there's some fighters that spend their entire career, well, most of 90% of their career in one organization. And then there are some that have been able to kind of fight in different ones throughout their career. We're talking to Dan Henderson. He did Strikeforce. He did Pride. He did UFC. This is still under the Bellator banner, but I know eventually you're going to get your PFL scrap in there as well. What do you think? Is it a little bit of a badge of honor to kind of have been able to experience all these different time periods in mixed martial arts, these different organizations?
I think it'd be pretty cool to say you fought under so many, you know, I think of stuff like that. I think about, Eddie Alvarez, a good friend of mine, trainer partner. And it's like when I left for UFC, my thing, like, I want to be UFC champ, I want to be here. He said, man, you want to be the champ, but it's about who's going to pay you the most. At the time, I'd have been in every organization there is. Like, it's never, like, I didn't have any problems with him. It was like, who's going to pay the most? And it's cool to say I've been a champ in just about all of them. So if you can go out there and get paid somebody or the same amount or more from somebody else, you go. Let's take that experience. Go meet different people. You might see one organization might be better than the other. And as for me, I was actually glad I took that advice because for me, Bellator has been amazing compared to my experience in the UFC. But who knows? I can go to PFL and it'd be even better over there. And that's just something I'm looking forward to see. We'll see. I can go over there. It could be worse. I can go over there. It'd be better. It'd still be cool just to say at the end, like, I fought for all the top brands. I literally fought in all the top brands except for one FC at this point. So it'd be cool to have that on my resume as well.
Because you were sharing with us that you have a little inconsistency in getting fights, once you're done with, you know, the Bellator Championship Series, maybe you have to defend if you win, you know, on the 22nd or whatever. Will you be interested the following season in the PFL regular season format where it's pretty consistently laid out? You get 2 regular seasons and 2 possible playoffs and then the $1 million prize. Is that attractive to you?
Yeah, I got to the point where I've already beat everybody to be beaten Bellator, and it's like hard to find who's going to challenge Corey next. And yes, 100%, that would be something I'm interested in going. I've already got my belt here. I go get a championship belt, do another tournament, my 3rd tournament in my MMA career. Go out there and win this one, win 2. I won the Ultimate Fighter, lost the Bellator Grand Prix, win the PFL tournament. That'd be something else to put on my resume. And again, to do a tournament fight and my contract is already set, that's just a lot more money per fight. You got just like you said, the schedule is already set. So you know you got at least two fights to make it into the playoffs. Then you got the two more fights or three, whatever it's going to be if they expand it. That's just a lot more money and a lot more fights I can get before I'm done.
And then lastly, one day would you like to follow Nemkov to heavyweight, either to just fight him, because I guess we can say it's 1-1, even possibly be an Ngannou opponent. There's a $2 million payout there, or just because overtime wants to test himself in a different division.
I mean, like I said, people ask me all the time, would you ever go to heavyweight? What a lot of people don't know is I debuted at heavyweight. I was a heavyweight until I got to the UFC. I had never cut weight before until the Ultimate Fighter. That was my first time. And I got it figured out. And I stayed there. I started the job here, and I got to finish this job. But after I get the belt, anything is possible. You know, they give me an opportunity. Hey, you want to go to heavyweight and fight Nemkov? 100%. Let's go. If you want to go to heavyweight, fight Nemkov, I'll beat him, whatever it is. All right, let's go. We're going to put you in a title fight. Whether Nemkov got a title or Bader, whoever it is, then, oh, you can fight Nemkov. I'm down for whatever. But my thing is I have to finish business at 205 first. Yes, I would love to get that revenge against Nemkov and show, like, that first fight wasn't a fluke. Second one, I just wasn't as prepared. Third one, I'm leaving no stone left unturned, and I'm going to get that W. And then from there, Nemkov, whoever got the belt, whatever it is, I'm all for it. But first things first, we got business to handle at 205. Then we move from there.
We got 30 seconds, so it's got to be a quick one. But if you win on the 22nd, because the UFC's had so much turnover, would you consider yourself the best light heavyweight in the world?
I've said it before. Me and in every interview I do, I know I'm the best in the world. I don't have to go out there and boast it and shout it anymore. Every time I do it, just turn over, you're not in the UFC, this and that. It doesn't matter who's in the UFC. I think the PFL and Bellator's roster is better than the UFC. As you said, the belt keep going back and forth, and there's nobody there that's just set solid. And it's the dominant champ over there right now. And I just feel like I'm still in my prime. I can beat anybody on my best day, and most of them on my worst day.
We're out of time, so thanks for the time, Overtime.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
See you, buddy. Well, that was a quick one, but this guy thinks if he wins, him along with the talent that's at Bellator should make him the number one light heavyweight. I should say that along with the turnover that the UFC's had recently at light heavyweight, he really feels like he can be the best light heavyweight in the world.
Yeah, I think for Corey Anderson right now, though, it's got to be put up or shut up, right? Like, you got to make that happen in the cage. And this particular fight here, Carl Moore's no joke. You know, it's going to be a tough fight. I think Corey can get it done, though. The one thing that Corey has is, like, his skill set does at least make you feel like he's in every fight. You don't feel like he's overwhelmed by the opponent, because no matter where it goes, you still feel like he's got a shot. So if I'm Corey Anderson, I think now's the time. This has got to be the run. This has got to be it.
Everyone thought, because he was smoking Nemkov in the first fight, that this was going to be it, or that was going to be it. And I think we even had an interview with him, and he had talked about, weren't they going to Hawaii afterwards? Like, it looked like he had his lay on him already, you know, as he was walking to the Bellator cage. Like, he thought it was a slam dunk, but it turned out it wasn't. What's his face? Nemkov rose to the occasion, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't get them any more chances, that's for sure. So hopefully Corey Anderson makes the best of it with that one. How about Max Holloway? He's saying he's putting on weight the real way. So last time he fought the 55, he obviously weighed 155, but he just didn't feel strong there to compete against Poirier. And in this fight, he has lifted, he's done strength and conditioning, he's eating, and he just seems like he's happier because he doesn't have to go through that massive weight cut at the very end, like on fight week.
Yeah, so, I mean, those are the things you want to hear. But even with that, okay, it's still like, it's not like he's just going up to 155 to dip his toe in. He's going in against an absolute savage. So even if you say all the right things and everything, I'm still looking at a guy that's just done this repeatedly at this division. And, you know, come fight night, he's still going to be the bigger dude. A lot of people are saying Max Holloway has more of a chance in this. And I don't know. I mean, Justin Gaethje is one thing, you know, like he just recently started to wrestle a little bit. But when you look at Max Holloway's stance, it's very upright. I can just see Justin kicking the hell out of those legs and making him pay. But Justin is going to, he's going to give you your opportunities. If you're Max Holloway, you gotta land quick, because that dude will tear you up from the bottom up. And, but they are the things that you want to hear from Max Holloway.
And think of the incentive now, because you're hearing these rumors of how Dustin Poirier might be next. Well, Gaethje's got to make sure I'm next. I beat Dustin Poirier at BMF in 2023. But he's also got to make sure Tsarukyan or Oliveira doesn't outshine him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's got, so he's got a few things going on there. Oh, and by the way, he's got to win his fight by, you know, versus Max Holloway. But I think there's some incentive for him to go out there and try and get the finish. As far as for Holloway, there might be some incentive there. I don't think by beating Gaethje, he'll get a title shot. But he, if he beats Gaethje and finishes him, he might get that mic time and say, Ilia Topuria, I'm coming for you, you know, and maybe a railroad one of those guys. Like, I mean, I know O'Malley's not going to get it, but anybody else that thinks he might have a shot at Topuria, I guess Alexander the Great would be one. You know, this could really be Max Holloway's magic moment.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, that kid, a lot of people love him. I wish... You know, we missed the boat with BJ Penn, but I wish Max Holloway had a big fight in Hawaii. I think that would be so incredible. But every time we ask about it, just doesn't seem like something that can happen, which is the dumbest thing of all time. But that's just how it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, there's not that much going on. I've had a long day out in Arequipa, Peru. I don't think I've said this in a few weeks, but I think we're starting to wind down our trip. But I do want to thank anyone that's ever asked about how mom's doing and what's the progress, when can we come back. It's looking soon. It could even be as soon as in time for March Madness, and it may not, because she is improving with every physical therapy session. So part of me is like, oh, like, this is where we're gaining strides and, you know, getting her closer to 100%. I don't want to ruin a good thing, but I'm trying to balance that with making her happy, and being home would make her happy. So, but no, thank you. Seriously, a lot of you will just hit like on social media when it has to do with our mom. Others have left kind messages or sent us texts and things like that. So I don't want to forget to thank you guys for it, because I read them all and I read some to my mom, and it really, really does lift us. But yeah, because we've had kind of some long days, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We have a lot of relatives that come over, and I had to fix a lock in one of the rooms. Mm-hmm. Really, my cousin did it, but I had to stand on the other side and just kind of hold it while he was doing some screwing around or something like that. Dude, I must have been in the same position for an hour. And I was starting to sweat, and my back was locking up. Holy cow.
Last night I did a – Laura asked me, she goes, you want to try one of my workouts? It's like one of these fitness girls on TV. She goes, it's weights. I'm like, all right. Man, by the end I was hurting. I'm really sore today, yeah.
Are you hurting today?
Yeah. Well, when I woke up, I was like, hey, I'm not so bad. But then, like, every 30 minutes, it was just increasing more and more, the soreness. And now I'm a little better. But, yeah.
What would you compare it to? Like, CrossFit or Hell Week in football? Or
it was, oh, no, hell no. Those are, God, you think somebody's actually trying to murder you. But it was just tough, you know. I underestimated it because I probably should have used like lighter weights, because it was more like lots of reps, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's push-ups involved, there's stuff like that. But it was cool. It was fun.
You guys went to a gym and did it, or you did it in the garage?
No, it was just YouTube.
Oh, okay.
I'll send it to you.
I guess before we do close, I do want to say prayers and positive thoughts to Mark Coleman, UFC Hall of Famer. He's battling for his life because his family had a fire in Ohio, a house fire. And so he went in and he was a hero, apparently, according to some of the testimonials of what happened. He went in and I guess he carried both of his parents out of their home. And then he went in to try and save the dog, but the dog didn't make it. It breaks my heart to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he did lose a family member, because how are dogs not family? But yeah, he did save his parents' lives. The dog didn't make it. And he was airlifted to a hospital in Toledo. And I guess they live in Columbus. You know, he's always kind of been from that area. It's really, really sad, man. Coleman's battled a lot since he retired. It's pretty uplifting when I would see him in the corner of a Matt Brown or I remember he was an assistant coach for BJ Penn, I think, one time. He's just kind of always around, but you could tell his body's really broken down, man, from years of wrestling, years of MMA. And I remember he's had hip surgeries, but man, that dude's tough. So if anyone can make it, it's him.
I talked to him for a while at Bellator in LA.
Well, that's right.
And I do want to say that, you know, obviously the Hammer, what a hero, right? Going in there and saving your family. But I also want to say that dog is a fucking hero too, because he's the one that kind of woke him up and let him know that the fire was actually happening.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the story, is the dog was the one that actually kind of alerted him to it.
And alerted the Hammer?
Yeah. And Wes Sims shared something not too long ago that I guess they did some kind of procedure on him. And it went
on Wes or on Coleman?
On Coleman. And it went pretty well. And that he actually squeezed his daughter's hand, so it seemed like he was starting to come out of it a little bit. But they're going to do it again tomorrow. So, yeah, thoughts and prayers for Mark Coleman and his family, for sure, for the poor dog. And I just wanted to close out on one thing, too. The spinning back click that we do every week, this was a fun week. We had Big John McCarthy as our guest, as a panelist on there. And you know, it's different when we have a fighter or somebody in mixed martial arts join us, aside from our staff. And definitely, if there's ever a time where we can break you and you say, all right, already, I'm going to check it out, do it on this episode, because I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, Big John did not in any way phone it in. He was like all pumped up, man, from the minute we all got together for the pregame huddle to actually executing the show. He didn't mail it in at any time. Like, it was fun having Big John McCarthy on Spinning Back Click. And so not only watch, if you've never watched, because we really think you'll like it, but perhaps you can share it as well, Facebook or retweet, repost on Twitter X, add to your story, I guess, is what you would do if you see any clips or anything like that on Instagram, or simple email, simple text to somebody. It's just a YouTube link, so you can, you know, send that as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would really mean a lot. Like I say, we're really trying to get the show out there and many eyeballs as possible. It's also in podcast form. So we record live on Mondays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, but the podcast is available for downloads on Tuesday over at Omni, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Anyway, all right. So, Gills, let's get on out of here. You're going to see a lot of our interviews for this week that we kind of accumulated since last week. You'll see them on YouTube or recapped here on MMA Junkie. So we've been trying to stay busy, even though it was a fight week and I'm over here and goes over there. I think we've been still holding our own. So fun sport to cover. We really thank you all for tuning in. Go out and be a champion. As always, don't just take up space on this planet. Actually, go out and be a champion. Do whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.